Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have a treat today. I have with me in the studio Dana Lynn Anderson, who is a friend, a colleague, and the author of a gorgeous new book called Art and Spirit, Creativity and the Transformation of Consciousness. She's only on the island for a couple of days, and she's willing to spend a little bit of it with me doing this interview, and I thank you very much for being here, Dana.
Thank you. I'm honored and delighted.
A lot of people, well, first of all, let me give a little bit of context, because people who've been listening to the show probably know that I have a kind of peculiar start in the area of particularly visual arts. I was really interested in creativity and creative expression as I was writing my book, Meeting the Muse After Midlife. But there was a black hole in my creative world, and that was visual arts, because I was so adamant that I could not do anything creative that involved visual arts. I mean, that had been hammered into me for years. I made a decision when I was 10 years old, and that was that. So I met Dana really right before the pandemic, and you and I had great conversations about creativity and the importance of creativity in our lives. But you were doing courses in Oregon and in Italy, and that was pretty far to go. So one of the secret blessings of the pandemic is that you had to go online, and you started teaching these transformative arts seminars online where people really all over the world could join you for an afternoon, a week, a weekend, exploring a different approach to art and consciousness and creativity. And I remember my very first workshop with you, because I asked you lots of questions. I was really nervous. I was like, well, what exact materials am I going to need? And you know that I'm not really an artist, and I can't do this, I can't do that. And you, in this beautiful, benign, calm voice, said, it doesn't matter at all. You can get a paper box and cut it up. You can have your pencils or your crayons. Get whatever you have. And you gave us a list of materials, but mostly it was your calming spirit. And what you said at the time was that you weren't interested in what we produced. You were interested in the process of bringing our creative spirits alive. And that had nothing to do with product, and everything to do with us. And of course, I was a little skeptical and very nervous given my background. But I tell you, after the first seminar where I worked on my kitchen table, you know, with whatever I had, I was hooked, because it was such an amazing opening to discover that the world of visual arts, the world of arts, the world of creativity can be freed from the world of product, production, producing, impressing, and all those other things that often go with making art. And I followed you through a number of online seminars and finally made it to your base camp in Assisi, Italy, where I got to study the world of transformative arts with you to become a transformative arts facilitator. And I think that was in, was that 23? I can't really remember right now. But anyway, the rest was history, and I have an enormous debt of gratitude to Dana. But over the years, I've also been interested and engaged in her process of writing a book, which is really like a opus magnum, a collection of her learnings from the past 30 years of studying art, creativity, consciousness, and spirituality, which is a really interesting mix. And since I published my book, it seems like there's a plethora of books on creativity. I mean, it's like everybody's discovering the power of creative expression, and Rick Rubens is writing a book, and Martha Beck is writing a book, and golly, there's so many, I can't even name them all. But I want to start by distinguishing your approach to creativity, transformation in the arts from the ways some others might be approaching it? And I don't know, that's a pretty open question, but what is it for you? And what is it that you're bringing that might be a little bit different?
Thank you for that introduction. It's so wonderful to reconnect after having, as you said, come together in these different ways. Yes, it's a very interesting question, and I'm thrilled that so many people are now involved with creativity and that it's burgeoning in our collective right now. It's actually been more like 40 years I've been doing this. And yeah. Back in the beginning, there weren't that many people.
Yeah, she's 100 years old, folks. Yeah. You don't
know. I started young.
Yeah, I know you did. Yeah.
But yeah.
And we should give people just a bit of context, because I did skip over that place, that you have both a background as an artist, but you also seriously studied systems thinking and consciousness, and you got a master's degree at JFK University. So along the lines, you have had these three tracks of an artistic track, a track that's studying consciousness and evolution and evolutionary thinking, and also a spiritual track where you've been very involved with the Ananda Yoga community, and it's a deep path. So those three paths are kind of all integrated in your work. So I give this and I go back
to
you.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. That's actually a good summation, in the sense that there are those three tracks. I had my undergraduate in philosophy, master's degree in consciousness studies, which was studying the different various paradigms of consciousness across cultures and throughout time. So it was very, very interesting. And that was continues to be a really strong thread for me, that part of trying to understand that. And I have been also, even just coming back to the Pacific Northwest, I was at the Evolutionary Salon on Whidbey Island some years ago, and I'm always very excited by and inspired by what's happening up here, because I feel like there's an electricity in the air around consciousness here.
This is Embracing the Muse, and I'm talking today with Dana Lynn Anderson, author of Art and Spirit, Creativity and the Transformation of Consciousness.
And then art, I started just as a child and have been doing it since. I didn't actually go to art school because I did some classes in the art world and thought, that's not what I want. I want to do something that comes from deep inside and not represent what I was seeing. And then I did, of course, have this spiritual path, which has been central my whole life, really. And I'm involved with Ananda, which is based on Paramahansa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi. It's very East-West mix. But I also studied a lot of different spiritual traditions and feel very clear that there are many ways to the path and many paths to the way. And at the academy, it's not within any one tradition. It's very ecumenical and universal, the Art Academy, the Transformative Arts Academy that I have in Italy. Those three strands have been a part of it. And so you could look at how this is different in a few different ways. One is that it does pick up the arts, not from the perspective of the art world and what you might have grown up with, not the art classes. In fact, in some senses, it's quite revolutionary in contradistinction to that. It's more of understanding the arts as a vehicle for consciousness. Sometimes I even say to people, this actually isn't really about art at all. We do happen to use art materials and do creative process, but but it's not about art per se. It's because it just so happens. I mean, really, it's almost like this is a miracle, and I don't know why, but it's true, that when you engage in creative process, it opens up your consciousness in a way that is very direct, alive, immediate, and is different from almost any other approach. And it opens it innately and instinctively, because every single human being is intrinsically creative. And that's what this taps into. And when you are being creative in a flow, when you've opened up and you're allowing that creative process to flow through you, you are entering into an expanded, spacious state of consciousness. It's very much like the, I call it sometimes the Eden Zone, the state of childlike wonder, the place of the genius mind of the child who sees all possibilities, who's flexible and responsive to life and in the moment, becoming true to everything that's in front of them and engaging it. And that mindset, that consciousness is what we need on this planet right now. We need to be able to enter into that high vibration flow state that allows us to catapult over the limitations of the rational mind and the limitations of linear thought and history and the weight of what's come behind us. We are in a generation in between, a time in between. We can't just go back to what did our parents do, our grandparents do. There's something that's emergent in this time that is not in front of us. And it's an in-between zone. And that state of consciousness of creative flow turns that unknowing state into a state of a fertile field of genius.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pause you for, because that was a lot. We could have a whole conversation just on the past paragraph that you gave us. And I think that is actually one of the challenges, because when you start talking about consciousness and talk about expansion as people have done and as you've studied at JFK University and as so many great thinkers have thought, you can get lost in thought. And one of the powers of the approach that you're using, the transformative arts, is that you can seed people's imagination with great ideas. And your book is full of terrific quotes from leading thinkers. But there's something about actually digesting it by using your own hands, by adding your own creative spirit to it, that makes it whole, I think, in the way that words alone can't.
Yes, absolutely. It's the somatic engagement and the childlike self that engages. And there is a magic to it. I see time and again, people come and they come to a workshop and they're like, oh, I don't know if I can be creative. And I used to be, but I'm not anymore. I've never been, or I can't even draw a stick figure or whatever it is. And within a short period of time, using these approaches that I'll mention in a moment, people are just like letting go of so much weight and tension and just relaxing into a state of play and being that is in itself transformative, but it's very real and experiential.
Yeah, and then one of the things that I really appreciated, and I just want to mention, I'm talking today with Dana Lynn Anderson, who about her transformative arts approach that she talks about in her book, Art and Spirit. I was quite amazed at how quickly you could take people who were like me, like, oh, I don't know if I can do this, blah, blah, blah. You didn't try and reason us to a different place. You actually put us into an experience right away. And then that experience began to reshape us. You want to tell us a little bit how that happens? And because it's really multimodal. It's not just giving people crayons, but it's giving them a body somatic experience, a meditative experience, a musical experience, mm-hmm. and an art experience at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we use a lot of different modalities in the course of the work, theater, games, play, movement, music, all these things that you're mentioning. But the essence of it is over the decades, over the years, I tried to distill what could most quickly immerse people in a state of being and play and consciousness that transcended the words, like got us through the words. Because if you stay in the words, I used to have longer spiels in the beginning, you know, like, let me explain to you how creativity is so amazing, you know, but it didn't matter. People are still just sitting there in their bodies in that place of tension. And as soon as you enter into the experience, it changes. And so what we're really doing is actually learning how to, what comes to me in this moment is just even the word express, which means to press out. So for example, one of the techniques that I offer is people come starting out as we do in many of the different processes. We listen to music and move a little bit with our eyes closed and have some imagery, because that just, catalyzes the mythic imaginative mind and sparks it into aliveness. And just on a very basic level, if you are moving, you are not thinking in the same way. The moment you start using your body for movement, it changes how much your mind is engaged in hamster wheel thinking. It softens that, and you start to be aware of breath and other things coming through. But the next thing we do after doing that is we come to a table, and on the table is paper and a whole like cup or 2 cups measurement of water. And we pour the water onto the paper. And the instruction is to take your fingers and your hands and move the water on the paper. And it sounds somewhat ludicrous, I would imagine, but when you're there and you're doing it, maybe the first few moments you feel awkward, but pretty soon you start to have this kinesthetic connection to how you're feeling and what you're pressing out, expressing, pressing out your fingers, pressing out your palms, pressing out your hands. And you start to relate to what you're expressing, not from how it looks and how it appears, but from how it feels and how authentic and true it feels. And so it's a revolution, a shift, a revolving away from the visually centric part that is trying to make a pretty picture, that wants it to look good and looks around comparing itself to others and sees what can I maybe change the composition or add a color, this mindset we have with what we think the arts are. And it begins to shift to clearly a deep soul familiar longing deep in our souls with wanting to express who we are.
Yeah, I remember the first time I did that exercise with you. And first of all, it was greatly freeing because I can pour water on a page. I can do that. But then as I did, and as I was working with, and I didn't have fancy materials, I think I was using flip chart paper, which isn't the best for it, but it worked enough. And I was reminded, because I think we may have poured a little paint on afterwards using plain old tempera
watercolors.
Yeah, it kind
of evolves into color after that.
It evolves into it, but I said to myself, I remember it was finger painting. That's when I felt like I had it. I was in tune. I had the joy of creating, and there was no judgment, and I just adored that. And it was almost like reawakening the child who had been an artist when she could finger paint, but then when she was supposed to do it a certain way, really began to lose it. And that was like, you mean finger painting is real art too? I was so excited. And went on from there. But yeah, that's so amazing to think about what can reawaken with something as simple as moving water on a piece of paper.
And if you go forward with that, you'll find like it's so amazing to me to watch the people begin to dissolve into that, and they slow down and the time slows down, and they let the paper and the water begin to carry them. And the next thing you know, the paper for some people is dissolving and they're rolling little paper balls around the table, and it doesn't matter. And this is this brilliant moment where the medium and the modality melts into the process, and something really deep, ancient, and from the future, from the higher self, begins to have the avenue to pour through, because it's no longer trying to become something that's already known, some picture that you want to represent. It's becoming a portal moment to something that wants to come through.
I want to hold you there, because that's so interesting right now. Because when people think of art, often it's the representational, like who can do the best Robin, you know, representing something. And that's fine, because you can have an experience of soul painting a Robin. And then there's also concept art. And we've talked back and forth about how did we ever get to a place where a shark in a tank of formaldehyde is considered high art. But, you know, that's the world and all. But to be able to say it doesn't have to be representational. It doesn't have to be conceptual. It doesn't even have to be abstract. It has to be you.
Mm-hmm.
That's another realm that in the art world we almost don't have a language for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of what you're bringing out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
This is Embracing the Muse, and I'm talking today with Dana Lynn Anderson, author of Art and Spirit, creativity and the transformation of consciousness.
One of the, what this takes me to is a recognition that I had at a certain point about the word originality. And this actually came from the man who started the Ananda community, Swami Kriyananda. He taught a lot about art and creativity. And he just pointed out very simply that the word originality comes from the sense of from the origin. And what we do as a culture so often in these times is we make originality into breaking the rules, into stretching the boundaries, getting to the cutting edge, doing something that's so different. And it becomes, in the art world, has become at different times a contest of shock value. And it just becomes something where you're trying to be original by simply being different and rebellious against what is. And what is amazing is if you understand that originality means to go deeply to your own origin, the depths of your own soul and spirit. And when you do that, this is where it ties into the mystical part. God, whose center is everywhere, circumference nowhere. One of the most ancient definitions of God from the ancient world.
Say it again, Dana.
Carved on temples. God, whose center is everywhere, circumference nowhere. And that is the understanding that at the center point of every single human being is the heart of God. And the Copernican revolution that discovered that, the earth is not the center, we revolve around the sun, you know, changed many things in culture and consciousness, obviously. But now, if you go forward in time, contemporary cosmology echoes back to this understanding that there is a center everywhere. The space is not expanding inside. It's the expansion of space itself. And so the image that kind of helps a little bit with this is like a loaf of bread with raisins in it that's rising because it's yeasting. It's not as if there's a point from which everything explodes, like the Big Bang. It's the understanding that from each point of space, the universe is actually expanding.
That. Yeah.
It's kind of a contemporary way of thinking. God, whose center is everywhere, circumference nowhere.
It reminds me a bit of what our island's favorite mythologist, Michael Mead, likes to say, because Michael is always saying that there really are two spiritual paths that he talks about. One is the contemplative, and the other is the creative. And it's not either or. They can easily intermingle. But to be able to see the power that a lot of people associate with the more contemplative, quote, spiritual path can also be found in this kind of creative process work that you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, I really love Michael Mead's work and have been delightfully feeling a sense of resonance with it for a long time, especially around the understanding of myth and imagery and story as being a transformative element in consciousness, and how much, you know, now with contemporary neurotheological insights, we understand how much our how the stories we tell ourselves shape the world that we live in. And that's a very important point with the arts too, that we can, when we go into these places that approach art and creativity as a spiritual path, as a mode of consciousness, that it's not for the production, it's for the in-depth dive within that brings forth higher, deeper, more powerful and profound states of consciousness. And that's why we're doing it.
And I remember coming out of just even an afternoon of creative process work with you online, even, mm-hmm. where it was like I had been in a meditative retreat. I would go out and I would just be in awe of the trees and the grass, and the world had just kind of awakened. Mm-hmm. Just from having those maybe 3 hours mm-hmm. of work together. And it was very much like I had been in a meditative space, except for some of us, like me, if you just sat me down on a chair and said, meditate for 3 hours, my mind would go zonkers, mm-hmm. you know, and I would be planning everything.
Right.
But by going in through this creative door of movement, imagination, myth, And then working with my hands, I go into a different zone.
Absolutely.
And it's not about the head.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sound and somatics. And these are things that we knew. Ancient cultures use dance and music and theater and mask making and all of these different things, not to enter gallery shows, obviously, but to contact the divine, actually. The arts were used to open the inner channel to the collective consciousness and the divine consciousness.
I was trying to remember I was talking to an artist in a recent interview, and she was talking about some culture, and I don't remember, it wasn't in Africa, but it was in, you know, another country where they believe everybody is an artist. Just the way in Africa, everybody sings, everybody dances. It's who you are. There's no divide that says these guys are, these guys aren't. It's just who you are.
Right.
And you're kind of offering us a path back to that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like remembering what has been forgotten.
Yes. And that remembering happens kind of in a fractal way, like on a personal level. As soon as you get past thinking about it and actually engage in creative process and enter into, dissolve into, let go into a creative flow, you remember your childlike joy and genius. It just snaps back to you. Mm-hmm. You come back to that place and you're a 5-year-old and the sky is more blue and you notice the butterfly and, you know, all of these things that you're talking about that are so wonderful. But it also, I think, awakens us on a broader collective level also, and to a place of remembering and recognizing the ancient future tribe of humanity and our mycelial connections that bind us together in powerful intra-psychic ways. Mm-hmm. So one of the words I love is the word murmuring. And it's, for those who aren't familiar, it's a word that describes birds flying in a flock together and how they move through the sky, changing their shapes, and they make these beautiful formations. The word murmuring can also be used for a school of fish that are swimming along and seem to shimmer together as they change directions. They are not, I can tell you authoritatively, they are not up there broadcasting their directions to each other. They don't start out in the morning with a plan and say, hey, everybody, we're going north this way and then we're going to turn south. They're not going, hey, you up there, bird in the front, can you please move to the left? We're all going to go left. It's not the linear, rational communication that we use as human beings. It's a kind of communication that comes from each person, each being, each bird, each fish, sinking into their own intuitive awareness and therefore being able to synchronize and syntonize with the beings around them. And that is possible for us as human beings right now. And it's not only possible, I think it's crucial. Mm-hmm. Because if we are going to come into a place where we can deal meaningfully with the problems that are around us, it's not going to be solutions that come from the rational mind. We sort of ran out of the solutions that could have worked 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah. And I want to talk to you a little bit more about this whole question of imagination for the future. And in fact, I think we're going to have to do a whole nother interview on it because it's such a potent topic. But I remember Dana runs a transformative arts program in Assisi, Italy. And I remember when we were singing, we would do a lot of chanting, but we would sing in a way where everyone was free to bring their contribution, their note, their mm-hmm. voice. But it didn't take long. And I tell you, 30 seconds max for the group to begin to come into a whole.
Yeah.
And without any direction or choral conduction. And we found our note. We found our way with individual differences to come into that collective whole. It was really beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Embracing the Muse. And I'm talking today with Dana Lynn Anderson, author of Art and Spirit, Creativity and the Transformation of Consciousness. One of the things that I found so powerful in your book, and I have to tell people, this is a gorgeous work of art in and of itself. There's only a few copies available right now in the United States, but there are more coming, and I will keep you posted in the show notes when the more is coming. But there was a piece that you wrote on stress, and I'm going to quote from your book. because you were saying, well, yeah, there's so much richness that I don't think I can quote one thing directly. But you were speaking into the thing I've been writing about for a couple of years now, which is how overwhelmed people feel. And heck, we were feeling overwhelmed during the pandemic. But I feel like the overwhelm is continuing to increase. And not only do we have crazy people running the country, but we have so much that's coming at us so fast. And it's sometimes not even good and bad. It's just fast and it's overwhelming. And so I know I'm always looking for ways to reset my nervous system and come back into myself. And you had some really powerful things to say about overwhelm and stress and how what ways we can think about it through this transformative arts approach.
Yeah. Well, that chapter kind of picked up from a very interesting observation from reading some of the material around what it is that causes stress. And in the beginning years of the studies, the researchers struggled with how to define stress, because one event might be stressful for a person and that same event might be invigorating for another. So stress was not something you could pin just on the event itself. And as they looked into it, what they began to see is that what really determined the stress was, is the outer world bigger than you and you are smaller than it? And that feels stressful. If you are small in relation to what's happening and what's happening is huge, then you feel stressed.
I want to underscore that. It is so powerful. And I never heard it said that way. When the outer world is bigger, say that again.
Well, when the outer world feels bigger than you and you feel small in relationship to the outer world, obviously there's disempowerment, all these things, but you feel stressed. And when you do not feel stressed is when you feel large and spacious in relationship to the outer world. It takes on the proper proportion. Stress happens when that regulatory proportion between inner and outer world changes so that it's big, you're small. And this is why, one of the reasons why the arts are so effective at moving us past that overwhelm and stress, because it's one of the few areas where we're bringing the inside world out. We are mostly imbibing the bombardment of the outer world. And mm-hmm. in this creative act, in the expression, we're bringing the inner world and we're pumping it back out. We're pumping the muscles, in a sense, and the blood of the being that we are into the true spaciousness. And when we do tap into that originality, that origin within, we find ultimately the origin is the spaciousness and the vastness of our eternal soul, of the spirit. Because at the heart of our own unique, never to be imitated, never repeated self, mysteriously, is also the universal, the divine. And so when we go to the very depths of our own being, we find the immensity of eternity. Mm. And that is bigger than the outer world.
That's always bigger. But lest any of our listeners, like me, if I had been hearing that, I go, well, that's pretty, you know, that's for the highly evolved and enlightened souls. But meanwhile, here on the planet, I'm trying to cope with X, Y, Z. And it doesn't have to be that big either. You know, I know I've talked in the show about the power of picking up a pencil and just having sacred space, if it's for 5 minutes, to just allow your own spirit to come through your hands.
Yes.
To do something, to make something, to create something.
Yes.
That can be so small, really. It doesn't have to be impressive. It doesn't have to be big. And it doesn't have to take a lot of time, although it's wonderful to have, you know, a weekend or weeks to do it. But it feels like it can save us.
You right.
know, like, okay, I cannot listen to another broadcast or another piece of news. I need to go anchor. You know, I need to go find out who I am apart from all that is coming at me.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. And it kind of reminds me of what you were saying earlier about Michael Mead's idea about the contemplative and the creative, that, you know, meditation is a time-honored way to go to that space inside, but so is creative process. And it's a way to reestablish that. And like you said, it's just the simplest things. That's why I start with and emphasize the childlike joy, because it's really letting the the tense, frantic, overwhelmed adult melt into the delighted, joyful, curious, exploring child.
Right. I know that you work miracles with people like myself who come in thinking, oh, I can't. And then you discover that that doesn't even, it's not even relevant. Mm-hmm. It just melts away. How does it work when somebody is a professional artist? Because I know, first of all, your book is full of really gorgeous art that you've done and that you've sold your art and you were successful as a professional artist. So that often a professional artist is living in another world that marches by different rules, and yet they deserve to have that same access to their original self and their original creation. So how do you bridge your work with to help those who are also professional artists? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great question. And interestingly, when I first started doing this kind of work, this was way back in Berkeley, I had a studio called Heartcore Studio. And a lot of the people who came to my private sessions and my classes were art students who were having their creativity crushed in art school. And they were extremely sad and angry and depressed about that because they had come to art school with this fire to create. And they were told, no, this is how it has to be. And this is the technique. And these are the kinds of things. You know, it was just such an entrapment for so many of them. So it's interesting because it's not like you have to abandon your craft or your talent or your ability at all. But what you have to do if you're going to stay alive in your creative work is continue to nourish your inner realms so that when you create, you are coming from that place and not tempted to come from an interactive, responsive engagement with outer ideas about how you should be doing it.
Yeah, I did an interview recently. It'll come out in a couple of weeks with Rose Belknap, who happens to be a local artist. And she was describing what I think a lot of artists have felt. She was exhibiting in a gallery, and she was doing really well, and people really liked her work. So the gallery owner told her the thing that gallery owners say, bring me more of that, and I'll sell it. And it was like she went dead. Mm-hmm. You know, the spirit went out. It's like, you mean I have to replicate what I've already done in order to please the people who've come in wanting this? And fortunately, she was smart enough to know, stop.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to kill your artistic zeal. Go back to what matters to you.
Yes.
And let it come from that.
Absolutely. And that's it. And so I've had over the years many different cases of art teachers or professional artists coming and feeling reinvigorated into their own creative depths, as well as people who never thought they were artists activating it and enjoying its exploration.
Right, right. This is Embracing the Muse. And I'm talking today with Dana Lynn Anderson, author of Art and Spirit, Creativity and the Transformation of Consciousness.
Well, what do you think about just kind of looking at the trajectory of the book in its sort of three sections? Would that be a good moment for that?
Sure. Well, let's just give people an overview because the book is not readily available, but hopefully it will be. Mm-hmm. I will, again, in the show notes for Embracing the Muse, I will tell people how they can find the book as its next edition comes out, because this is not a book that you can just run off in any printing press. It is actually a work of art. Mm. And so Dana did the first edition by publishing in Italy. It is absolutely gorgeous. It feels like a work of art. The second edition is going to be a larger run, and so it'll be more available. But if you just take a couple of minutes and give us an overview of the book, that would be terrific.
Okay. So, yeah, so the... I worked on this book for a long time. That's a question I won't answer.
I'm a writer. I know.
Yeah. But I was trying to bring together three different thrusts of this discovery that I've been working with for years. And the one is the beginning, wake up the artist, unleash your creativity, return to that Garden of Eden state of childlike joy. If you do nothing else, this is what will free happiness, will free the flow of creativity in your own life, will open the blood in your veins, the sap in the tree of life, you know. So this is a really important foundation. The second middle part of the book is taking those insights into how we can truly and powerfully affect our collective consciousness in these times because of the power of our visionary capacities to penetrate into the direction that we're moving as a culture and the role of the artist in that, the role of the artist in creating the world that's trying to be, that's coming from the future, not from the past. And then the last part of the book is the art, the mystic artist using the vehicle of art to contact increasingly spacious, expanded states of consciousness, much like meditation. That's where it has that interweaving with the meditative approach, that when you pursue the mystic, the creative path, the mystic part of you is touched and begins to emerge as well. So I have a phrase, the mystic artist, because I think it's something that is a calling, actually. A calling not for just professional artists, a calling for every human being who can awaken to their creative potential, to can bring forth and unleash that fiery creative spirit. We are called to be mystic artists of the future that we are trying to bring forth and to move the pulse of the zeitgeist towards a future that is bright, that is worth living. Because, for example, just to kind of riff on that for a moment, you know, the types of things that we experience as examples of the future, for the most part, from media, from video, from film, is very dark apocalyptic theater that shows us the dark and grimy future possibilities. There is not a lot that's showing us bright possibilities. And so what is the role of the artist in that? What is the role of the meaning maker, the myth maker, the storyteller, any of the forms of art?
Well, I can't wait to talk to you more about that because okay. That whole topic is so incredibly rich and so incredibly timely. I mean, I can't tell you how often my husband and I have tried to find a movie to watch and have given up because he won't watch. And I don't want to watch either stuff that's dark and violent and too thrilling and designed to pump up your adrenal system, but really take you nowhere mm-hmm. in terms of giving you an impulse to create a new future. So we're going to talk about that.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I want to let people know just a little bit more about what you're doing and how to be in touch with you because... three things I know. You have this beautiful book. You also have an amazing program that you do out of Assisi, Italy, mm-hmm. Arte e Spiritu, an art and spirit program yeah. in north of Assisi, Italy. And people can find out about that by going to your website.
That's right, awakeningartsacademy.com.
And... there was two. There was a third thing I wanted to tell people about.
Well,
Mystic
Artists.
Mystic Artists community.
Yes,
say a little
exactly.
about that.
So, so the book, as I was working with it, I wanted it to be more than the words on the page. I wanted it to also connect with the experience because, as you mentioned, I realized begrudgingly, in a sense, I didn't think it was possible that people can actually have these experiences through online formats. Because for years I thought, oh, it has to be in person. I mean, this is so somatic and experiential, but it's possible. And not only that, if people make the commitment and have the support to engage in this inner realm on a consistent basis, it is absolutely life transforming. And so the Mystic Artist membership comes out of the book having a little QR code with bonus online material and then the possibility of joining this Mystic Artist group where we continue to connect over time together. And so that's the invitation with that.
Sweet. And I'll have all the information about that in the show notes for Embracing the Muse at Voice of Vashon. So I'll pause right now because there's so much more we have to talk about, and I look forward to a continuing interview. But for the meantime, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for being such an amazing interviewer and support and resource for your community and for all that you offer the world around you. Sally, it's a real honor and pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.